Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome everyone here to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. We're excited and grateful to have you here. I'm Heather Choate with Mark Johnston. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing wonderful today.
Awesome.
Thanks for asking.
We're doing good too. We've had some crazy high winds, like many people in the country the last several weeks. And so it's been, a lot of dusting is happening right now from these crazy dust storms that we've had. Today, we're gonna be talking though about how to feel valued by your spouse. So raise your hand if you ever feel like you have not felt as valued by your spouse as you would like. And I think that would be probably all of us. And before we get into that though, we're going to share our client win of the week. This one comes from Nicole. Mark, you want to share Nicole's win here?
Yeah, I'm wondering actually, I didn't actually look over this. So I'm wondering if this is the Nicole that I think it is. And I'm just scanning. I think it actually, anyways. Nicole saying, hi, all. Not posted for a long while with great support and work with Mark, the masterclass sessions, the podcast, and basically anything else. I'm pleased to say that my husband has said that he wants to try again and for us to try and make a new path together because we can't go back down the old one. In September, he told me that he loved me, but wasn't in love with me. In January, he told me that he didn't even want to be married, want to marry me 6 years ago. But here we are taking things a day at a time. We are taking things really slow. No overnight stays at the moment, but have agreed to aim for the summer and to go on holiday for a week as a family to Majorca. They're in the UK. One thing we do need to work on, though, is our communication. We're both poor in this area. And she's asking if there's any tips or thoughts. But the win there, there's like some questions, and then there's the win that she's sharing. And I'm pretty sure this is, yes, Nicole that I was thinking, you know, one of my personal clients. Nicole's an awesome person. And I know she's actually put a lot of work into this. So it's great to hear this win from her.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, from going to saying like, I didn't even want to get married to you 6 years ago. That's a very strong narrative. We always, let me talk clearly here. We have our PATH method and we help you guys identify what your partner's story is about you. And sometimes we hear a narrative like this, like, I didn't even want to get married with you. I didn't even love you at the beginning of our marriage. And so that's super amazing to see him let go of that narrative. And at the same time, it's like a normal day for us because we see this happen all the time with the PATH process here. Mm-hmm. And Nicole's husband could hardly even speak with her 6 months ago is what Mark just shared with me. And now the fact that they're planning a family trip and are even talking about getting back together is a huge win and part of the results that we see all the time when you guys use this PATH method. Love that. So, question for you guys, as you're listening, leave a comment here. What would make you feel valued by your spouse right now? What would really give you a sense of, I feel valued, I feel cherished, I feel appreciated. Maybe I even feel adored by my spouse. We asked this question over in our Thriving Marriage Facebook group, and we saw some interesting observations. So Mark, what did you see from the answers that people gave to this question?
I was looking through it and I was like, okay, here's some common themes. There's some common themes. And I was like, I've seen some of these sort of ideas before. And I was like, oh, this sounds a whole lot like love languages. I would say nearly every one of the answers from our question about value could directly be related to one of the five love languages. In case you've been living under a rock as you've been looking at marriage stuff, you know, love languages, it's Gary Chapman, right? Am I getting
Gary
the name
Chapman.
Right?
Yep.
Okay. So I don't really have a head for names always, so I always need to like make sure I'm attributing the right name. But Gary Chapman and his idea on love languages, it's been around a lot. He has a popular book, a good website, some quizzes. So most people, if they've been getting into fixing their relationship, my experience is that most people have run into this. But like, for those of you who haven't, he's talking about like, how do people give and receive love? And he says, hey, everyone has different ways, whether that's words of affirmation, physical touch, quality time, acts of service, or giving and receiving gifts. And I'm looking at a lot of these comments and like saying, okay, I don't want him to be angry at me all the time. He doesn't even talk to me. And I'm like, oh, this person wants words of affirmation. And to be told that he loves me and is in love with me again. Oh, there's words of affirmation again. And I could keep, here, I'm going to find a different one. Cuddling without begging for it. Oh, look, there's physical touch. And, you know, we could keep going down the list. If he put our relationship first, I could probably stretch that to say, hey, quality time, like that, that she's asking for her husband to be more present with him, with her physically. But I was like, oh, I could probably link each one of these requests. And I don't know, Heather, I don't remember if you and I have talked about this, but I know I talk about this with clients. I'm saying, hey, these love languages are great things to understand. I like linking theories together. I think you and I have discussed at least this, like we really like universal truths. And if we can see some things in, you know, one theory and like a similar idea in another theory and that same idea somewhere else, there's probably something good going on here. All right. So I actually kind of want to talk about this for a bit, some of these connections, but I'm curious, Heather, what have you seen in your marriage with love languages? What's been your experience? I know we all talk about the theory in a bunch, but have you seen anything interesting in terms of being valued and love languages in your relationship with Ben?
Yeah, so this came up like, I don't know, we were probably just barely married. I don't know, like within 2 or 3 years of our marriage. And we're like, hey, let's take the love language test and see what ours is. And I pinned Ben's and he didn't pin mine at all. So I was like, I know yours is physical touch. I just know that that's what yours is. And I was right. And then he thought mine was like acts of service or quality time, which is still great to me, but definitely words of affirmation is where it's at for me. So Ben grew up in a family, just a little bit of history, where words of affirmation were actually seen as a negative thing. That you should be loved for who you are, not necessarily what you do. And I love to be given a bit of a pat on the back and a little bit of praise for what I do. And of course, who I am. And I don't know, I've explored the different things, like, is that pride or anything? I'm like, no, it's just feels really good to me. I actually really like to be recognized and seen for some of the things I do and to have those words of affirmation. Just speaks to my soul. It just lights me up and makes me really happy. So I don't think that that's a negative, prideful, bad thing. So we had to kind of explore that a little bit. Ben definitely felt rejected at times when he made, you know, wanted to cuddle or dance in the kitchen. I'm trying to make dinner and I've got like, you know, bacon is about to burn and the baby's crying over there. And he's like, let's dance, let's cuddle. And I'm like, not right now. So he's definitely felt like rejected at times. So we had to work on like, you know, I would love to cuddle with you. Let's find a time that works for both of us. And he even went so far as to stop trying to stop cuddling because he felt so rejected at certain times. And I was like, we definitely need to bring that in. We definitely need to be able to have that need met for you and I. And I would love to have some words of affirmation without you feeling like they're a bad thing. So I don't always see it this complicated. Maybe it is in other relationships. But I think it was actually a little bit more of like Ben understanding that words of affirmation have value and they are important. And that when he does speak kind of that love language to me, it just lights me up and makes me feel really good. So there was definitely a process there.
I think I lost you there for a second. You started a question. Were you saying, how about you? Or
yeah.
Oh, okay. It cut out there for a second. You know what? Very sort of similar situation. And I wonder like how many people have that kind of situation happen. Jen and I hit like a low point when we were really, really busy with things with school and work and whatnot. And we're just sort of like, I'm not feeling loved. And we had to have this discussion and it was really surprising. I know I pointed out this story many times in podcasts and with clients, but I always found it really interesting that in our situation, both of us were trying to provide love and value in the ways that we liked to receive it, and then not recognizing when the other person was trying to show that love or value towards us. And we had this kind of aha moment. We're like, oh my goodness, you're putting in a lot of effort and I'm just not seeing it. And so we were really conscious about communicating those efforts and making it clear what we were wanting, and making room for some of those requests. That really shifted a lot of things for us.
Yeah. And we've seen that with many, many clients, that you tend to express love in the way you like to receive it, and you're not really understanding how your spouse likes to receive it. And they may feel like they're expressing love to you in the way they like to receive it, but you're not perceiving it. So it definitely is some truth to that. You know, Mark and I, you know, we do like when we find universal truth. And I know you talked about Chloe, how do you say her last name?
Madonna's
theory.
I think I'm pronouncing it right. I think it's not Madane's, but it's Madonna's.
Yeah.
But yes, I think she's an interesting person. I always find this interesting because it's the Robbins Madonna's, Institute or something. She works with Tony Robbins, but you don't ever hear her name. And I highly suspect that Tony Robbins is the face and a lot of the theories are hers.
Interesting.
That's my suspicion. She seems a bit more of a quieter person, but yeah, she has a great theory that we like to incorporate into our program on basic emotional needs. And you've probably heard us talk about this, but I think that the love languages theory connects with this. Chloe Madonna's talks about 6 basic emotional needs. And I think the love languages really is a good way to describe ways to meet 2 of those needs. You know, how do we connect? How do we fill that connection bucket? And how do we feel significant? You know, there's the other needs for like certainty or fun and variety, or what she calls uncertainty, needs for growth and needs for contribution. But I think love languages is really good for meeting those 2 needs. And so it can feel really draining when those love languages are mismatched. And then you say, I don't feel valued. But anyways, all of you we asked you that question and you all told us how you could feel valued and connected. And many of you listed love languages that are specific to you, may not have been aware of what you're answering, but I'm saying, hey, you're probably expressing how you wanted to feel loved. But the real question today was, how do we get the sense of value from your marriage right now? That was the whole point. That's why you're all listening to us, right? So how do we feel valued, Heather? You know, if that's drained a bit, if that's not feeling great, where do we start?
Yeah. So maybe if you're new to us or new to our podcast, you don't know maybe so much about us, but we've helped tens of thousands of couples now. And this whole idea of I don't feel very valued, I don't feel very important is a very common one when your spouse is pulling away, when they're wanting a divorce, when they're wanting a separation or space, when they're having an affair. You don't feel very valued because your spouse isn't really valuing you right now. It kind of is the reality of the situation. So I think the first thing is just kind of know your situation. Mm-hmm. And if your spouse is telling you that they're done, if they really don't want anything to do with you right now, then it's going to be kind of a difficult ask. Right now, very likely you need to work on maybe some other things before you can make requests to feel more valued or cherished in the relationship. It's kind of like going from 0 to 60 in 1 second. It's just not feasible. And one of the mistakes we see a lot of couples make or people make when they're in this situation is making bids for a lot of commitment too soon, or making bids for a lot of, you know, value and being cherished and a lot of connection. And if that's not where your spouse is at, then there are other things that we need to work on first before we try to make a big bid for intimacy and closeness and connection and commitment. I understand that a lot of you are like, well, we've been married 20 years. Like, we're married. I should be able to ask for that. And yes, in theory, you should be able to ask for that. But in reality, if your spouse is done, they want nothing to do with you. Is it going to work? No, it's going to be completely ineffective or backfire.
I think this really kind of falls under the categories of, you know, what are called shoulds. These are, this is what's considered a cognitive distortion, a way of thinking that's going to lead to problems. And one of those common categories is shoulds, like, mm-hmm. as in, well, this person is supposed to, they should love me. So yeah. Therefore I can make that demand because that's what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And says who is kind of the counter argument to that. Like, just, you're the one that's like putting this expectation out here without recognizing that there's someone else that gets to make that decision as well. And not to say, okay, well, you shouldn't expect, and I'm using that word, you shouldn't expect, you know, love in your marriage. But if you're saying you need to love me and they're saying, well, I don't love you, and you're getting upset at that, you need to take a step back from some of that. And you're like, okay, well, what is going on here? Rather than just keep pushing on your demand, right. And being frustrated by it.
Right. And you can look at your interactions the past several weeks, maybe months, maybe even years. Has that really worked for you? That's a really good way to look at things. Like, me demanding that they should love me or should be affectionate or should value and cherish me. It's not working, then you might want to revise that. One of the things that we really help couples with and help you guys with when you're finding out what are the steps to take that are going to work right now, that are actually going to help us get closer together. What are the common goals? We're going to actually go into that here in a little bit, but that we can agree on right now, and having little baby steps to getting up to that bigger level of connection and intimacy and, you know, significance that you're wanting to feel.
Yeah. No, this isn't to say, hey, you can't talk about feeling valued. Like, if you're going to be in a lot better situation to talk about your needs and feeling valued, if that's something that's wanted in your relationship currently. Like, if your spouse is just overwhelmed or focusing on other needs or any number of like other more benign issues, then you can probably have this conversation. We're just saying, hey, know your situation and like know where your spouse is at, and don't beat your head against a wall if you keep getting these sharp responses when you're talking about wanting to feel more loved or more valued. That's all we're saying.
Yeah.
So you mentioned something there just a moment ago. You're talking about creating common goals, Heather.
Yeah. And so instead of making a huge leap, it's like finding out what we have in common right now. Mm-hmm. So is it important for each of you to feel valued in your marriage, right? That might sound like a dumb question, because of course it's important. But the truth is, like, everyone has different priorities and areas of focus. So it might not actually occur to your partner that they need to shift anything right now. And that isn't because they don't care, but maybe they aren't aware of how important feeling significant or valued is to you, or whatever it is to you. And, you know, we're going to explore a little bit about those assumptions and how we think that we're talking clearly about something and our partner just does not pick up on it. And so you may think that they just get it or they know it, but they really aren't aware of what that is. So it's really important that we create some common goals and we have requests, some kind of clear agreements about what we're doing, no matter what stage your relationship's actually in, because that's going to go a lot further for you.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of situations like someone might say, well, my husband is, or my wife is working all the time and they don't have any time for me. And then when I talk to this other partner, they're like, oh, I thought by, you know, working and earning money, I was doing that because I wanted to provide for my family, because I'm trying to show them how much I care for them. Mm-hmm. You know, I maybe not that exact situation in all cases, but like I see similar sort of thoughts. And that's what we're getting at here. Like, of course, if we're asking, is it important for each of you to feel valued in your marriage? In what way is maybe a better way to look at that? And So when we're talking about creating common goals, we kind of have to have some understanding of like, what are the goals for each you and your partner? So like, what is important to you and what is important to them? And being able to come to some space where you can create some compromise is huge. Yeah. So I'm thinking here, like perhaps maybe you might be saying, my partner is, like I said, far too focused on work or the kids or the hobbies. And this is not necessarily a bad thing. It just means that there needs to be a discussion of what is important here. It means finding space for everything that is important. I liked your example earlier, Heather. You're talking about you and Ben's like, let's dance, let's cuddle. And you're like, okay, let's talk about when we can give some space for that. Like, I can't do that right now while I'm in the middle of cooking. And, you know, I think Jen and I have similar conversations as well in that regard. And you know what, when we actually kind of talk out in the open and we both express, hey, we want to give space for what's wanted, it takes away a lot of that tension and that sense of like, well, when am I going to get what I want? You know, you're always doing things that you want to do, and kind of that neediness or desperation just kind of goes away.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah. So I'm curious, Heather, what kind of goals or maybe values or messages have you and Ben discussed and really tried to emphasize? We're talking about like creating some common goals. I'm wondering how this actually what this looks like or how that's worked for you and Ben, perhaps. How do the conversations go? How has that turned out?
Yeah, so we really decided we needed to prioritize like dinner and a family, like scripture study, just a time to connect as a family pretty much every day. And so we had to decide, are we going to value sports and all the activities and all the bazillion things that kids can get involved in? Or are we going to prioritize having that? Is that which one is our bigger value, right? And we chose that the family time, dinner time, was going to be the priority. And so we had to think about, okay, well, we still like being active. We still like our kids doing those kind of things. So how can that fit in? And we found really beautiful solutions as we got a little more creative about how to create our own kind of like sports get together with friends in a week or a couple times a week that fit our schedule better than maybe what the, you know, the rec leagues were all doing and the school leagues were all doing and stuff like that. So that's a small example of just like, hey, here we have two values that are feel very strong. Which one's actually the priority? And then how do we make them work, right? Another example that I want to share though is that I really value growth. Ben really values security. So when you talk about like, what is important to you, what is important to them, and creating compromise. So like, I love to work on big projects. I'm like a visionary. I want to help millions of people. And Ben would be very happy to, you know, have our family and, you know, own our own thing. And that's it. And so, you know, we had to work together on like, when can Heather have space to do these big things? And then when does it not work as a family? So we made the compromise that anything before 5 p.m. is fine. He and I can both do pretty much whatever we want to do. So if he wants to play, I've talked about Farm Simulator on the podcast before, but that's one of his favorites, you know, or he wants to work on the garage or he wants to do whatever he wants to do. I'm okay with that. And he's okay if I want to be working from sunup until 5, but after 5, we've got a pretty clear boundary. We put work down and now it's family time. And that wasn't always that way. Obviously, sometimes I was working later and that's why we then had to come together and he had to be like, here, I want you to be able to have the room to grow. And I want to be able to prioritize our time together and our family time. So we had a compromise and that way felt really good to both of us. So we both are getting what we feel like we need and it works for the whole family. How about you, Mark?
Yeah, there's been some similar discussions. Of note, you know, one that I can relate to that you mentioned is this kind of work-life balance, work-life-family balance. And Jen and I have had many discussions about like, okay, how do we make sure that everyone in the family feels like there's time for them? Like, I don't know about your kids, but you know, I do know there's a lot of desire for quality time, that love language in my family. I know that's one of my love languages, and we've seen that in a lot of our kids. And so we've been very conscious to make efforts to make sure that like people feel like there's a little bit of one-on-one time. And so Jen and I will say this, you know, I actually just had a conversation with Jen earlier today. I was saying, hey, there's been a lot of like business focus lately, and I would really like to spend some time with you this evening. And so we had that discussion because I know that that's one of our values, one of our goals that we share is like, okay, we're going to make sure that there's room for discussion about needs and there's going to be room for each other. So because we have already had these discussions going back over many years, it's really easy for me to go to Jen and be like, hey, I want to feel heard right now. That's a discussion sometimes that we have. I want to feel heard right now. So I need you to listen. And like, it's going to be really important to me that we set aside some time over some point over the next few days where we can just spend some one-on-one time together. And because we've already established that value, Jen's like, okay, wonderful. You know, this evening would be perfect for that. But that's kind of the whole point. The whole point why we're saying create some common goals is exactly that. Because Heather and Ben have had these discussions, because me and Jennifer have had these discussions, it's not a big deal when we say, hey, look, here's this value that needs some focus right now. And we don't get any resistance in our respective marriages because that discussion has been had already.
Right. It's that ability to give and receive feedback mm-hmm. that's so important here. And it does make it very easy and free flowing once you've established it well. I'm thinking back though to earlier days when we didn't have it established very well. And that may be where a lot of you guys are feeling, where you're like, we are so far apart. We're not just talking about like family dinner. We're talking about like, are we going to live together and do life together anymore? You know, or like this other person that is now involved. That's a big no to my value system here. Now, what do we do? Right. And so one of the things that we really help you guys with is uncovering what common goals you may have. And it will surprise you because you feel like you're so far apart from each other right now. You couldn't possibly want the same things, right? But there are common goals that you actually both have. And when we help you uncover what they are and your spouse is on board with that, then that's what starts to create some level of connection there that we can grow and add upon. So we're not making a huge bid for commitment like, yeah, you're in love with this other person. Now you should just leave them and come back to me. That's not going to work, right? But it can be like, hey, can we talk respectfully in front of the kids, right? Common goal. Can we show some kind of level of respect and empathy here? Can we make sure that the kids are feeling really heard? We both want the kids to feel really heard. Let's build upon that common goal that we have. And then from there, you can start to add to it. Mark, what has your experience been when people feel like they're really far apart in their values or what they're wanting from their spouse?
So sometimes what I call this, and I'm going to relate it to your question here in a second, but sometimes what I call this is an acceptable arena. And I'm almost imagining like a gladiatorial arena when values are really far apart, because here's this space in the middle where we've agreed upon what the terms of the discussion are going to be like. We're going to make sure the kids feel heard. This is an area of discussion that we can agree on and that we want to work, make things work better. But what I've noticed is that even with people who feel like their values are really far apart, we find this kind of acceptable arena where these common goals, and they say, okay, these are areas that we can work on. And you know what happens is that starts reducing some tension, and it starts meaning that you can come to the relationship with like bids or requests, and you're not going to get as much rejection, which means that you're going to feel a little bit more connected, which makes it easier to create other arenas that are going to build on the relationship even more. Like, so you might be able to start talking about romance at some point, or physical affection at some point, even if right now that isn't an acceptable arena to discuss.
I I like that visualization. That's very clear in my mind. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
And speaking of clarity, the next piece of this is making those requests really clear. Along with the discussion of creating common goals and messages, we need to make sure that everyone understands clearly what is being asked. And some of the problems that we see with most clients and those that we talk to is that many of us are dropping hints and maybe believing that that we're being clear, which is a problem with communication. Mm-hmm. Many people provide love, value the way they want to receive love and value, and not realizing that that's not how their partner wants to receive. We talked about that with the love languages, right? Which again is a problem with communication and understanding. Mm-hmm. Many people tell their partner, you know, directly what is wanted or express willingness to accommodate their partner, but then they don't actually follow through, which then would be like a problem with action. We also see people talk about what they want, but they don't follow through or resist others providing what they want, again, which is a problem with action. So Mark, what have you seen as far as some of these really common, you know, trip ups that we have in making clear requests?
Well, I'm going to point out like that last one actually really kind of hit home with me. And sometimes my wife Jenny says, this is maybe perhaps one of my issues. I'll say, okay, I really want to, you know, whatever it happens to be, I really want you to pay attention to me, or I really want to do this thing, or I really want to feel like you're interested in some of my interests. It might be like a random hypothetical example. And then I will sometimes have this like quirk of, you know, once people start actually giving me what I want, I'll get into my head, no, they don't actually want to do this. They're just trying to appease me. It's not really interested. And I might go, this is when I'm really feeling low or when I'm really feeling overwhelmed. I might go and sulk, or I might be like, they don't actually want to spend time with me, even though that's what I was asking. And the reason why I'm pointing this out is because I've seen that in a lot of other people as well. And you might be saying, no, I'm not doing that. They, you know, or whatever it happens to be. But like what I'm getting at here, what Heather was getting at here, even getting away from some of these specific examples, is we can boil down to issues with like, are you actually making your request clear? Are you actually communicating what you want? And then are you actually creating, or are you actually like creating a situation that makes your request feasible, so to speak? Meaning like, are you actually accommodating your spouse? Like if you're saying, please spend time with me, and they're feeling overwhelmed with the kids, overwhelmed with finances, overwhelmed with something else. Okay, well, maybe there's an issue with action and you actually need to do something here, and you need to actually create a situation where you can actually spend some quality time. Maybe this is an issue with communication and you say, well, it sure would be nice if you would spend some time with me if you want to. It's not that important. Well, then, you know, I would expect your spouse to take you at face value and perhaps not follow through and not spend time with you because the request wasn't clear, the communication wasn't clear. I mean, we talk about making requests clear in a lot of other situations. I guess like the when I'm talking about this with clients, I'm always saying, okay, like communicate your request clearly and make sure that you're accommodating your partner to make sure that that request can happen. It's a different way of saying, I suppose, the same thing. Like, are you communicating things well? Are you taking action to allow for that to happen? Same idea, worded a little bit different.
Yeah. I'd love to know in the comments if you guys feel like the problem that you're having right now is more of a communication issue or an action issue. Do you feel like you're communicating clearly and that you're not really making accommodations or making things feasible for your partner to follow through? Do you feel like you are being really clear and maybe they're just not taking action? Or maybe your partner isn't being really clear to you. Maybe they're dropping hints and you're just kind of being expected to read their mind. Or maybe you've heard some things and then you have a hard time with taking action on some of these things. I'm going to just say, this is coming to my heart and my mind, that if you feel like you're being really clear and they're not taking action, you might want to look at how clear you're really being. I think that the first one that we talked about dropping hints and believing that we're clear, is one that I've been guilty of. And we kind of talked about some communication challenges between men and women, and it tends to be a lot of women are kind of dropping hints or wanting their husbands to read their mind. And so if you're doing it like that, or if you're just criticizing or complaining, that is not a clear request. So let's contrast that, what a clear request is not, which is not complaining as a way to make a good request, and showing what a clear request actually is. So a clear request is communicating your request in positive terms. It's saying, here's an example. My husband leaves socks everywhere. Drives me crazy, right? Pick up your socks. Stop leaving around your socks. Blah, 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 blah. Why won't you listen to me? I've been telling you for years, clean up your socks. You're so lazy, right? Instead of, hey, Ben, it would make me feel really calm and peaceful to have a home where it's orderly and clean. And it would make me feel like you're valuing me when you choose to pick up after yourself. How'd I do, Mark?
Probably going to get a lot more cooperation, I would imagine. I would hope from a very clear request like that.
So I hope that provides some contrast, right? And of course, supporting your situation to allow for your request to happen. So if I know that my husband comes home and he immediately has a lot of things to do, he may not realize that he left his socks there, right? Because he's just bombarded. It's dinner time, blah, 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 blah. And if I'm expecting him to do it right then, that might not actually work for him. So how could I allow him, you know, support the situation to allow that request to happen? Maybe I say, you know, before we get in bed, I would really feel grateful and calm and happy here if you had picked up your things. And that's enough time for him, just in this hypothetical example. But that's really the formula there for making a clear request. So you can take that same formula and apply it to your own situation.
I didn't know socks were that huge of a deal for you, Heather.
It's a big deal. It was like trauma for my brothers.
I was actually teasing. I was thinking this was like a hypothetical, not like nonsense sort of situation, but I was teasing. But anyway, but yeah, like here's the thing, like your partner might not be as motivated to make your specific request happen as you are. And that's why we're talking about this. And it doesn't mean that they don't love you. And it does mean that you are each focusing perhaps on different goals at the moment. And your example there, Ben might have been focusing on like the dinner and the kids and might not have realized, hey, that the socks are important. and when we clear a lot of this up and talk about the values and make the request clear, we can get away from that sense that, okay, my partner doesn't value me. We get away from that misunderstanding sometimes. Well, like I said, know your situation. Maybe your partner isn't valuing you, and that's a terrible thing to deal with. And you have to do some other stuff to get there. But a lot of times I'm seeing that it's misunderstanding.
Yeah. And even if you feel like your partner really doesn't value right now, and maybe they aren't actually valuing you very much, there are still some clear requests that you can make. We help you guys a lot with this. Mark, can you think of any examples of a situation like that where maybe the spouse isn't valuing them, but they still need to make some clear requests? Any example?
Yeah, I can think of even a current client where things had gotten really bad, such that the husband was saying, I'm not going to talk to you unless a lawyer is present. Like, no communication. That was where things had gotten to. I started talking with her about, okay, like what is important to your partner and what are some of these acceptable arenas? And she was saying, we have kids together. We need to be able to have at least to cut through some of this tension and some of this junk between us. So we can at least talk about the kids. And so, you know, in terms of requests, she said, I want to make sure that we can at least have enough respect and consideration, that we can, you know, accept each other's calls, that we can talk about the kids without it turning into a big argument. And I want to make sure that you feel, you know, here's this accommodation, this support. I want to make sure that you feel comfortable enough. Like, you're telling me that you don't want to talk. I want to make sure that we're doing something here so that you feel comfortable enough to have this discussion. And you know what? Like, that really opened the floodgates, and the two of them talked for a long time without a lawyer present. And you know, I'm not going to say that they're all sunshine and rainbows at the moment, but if we're talking about specific solutions to this specific problem, it did work.
Yeah.
So the last piece here is about exploring resistance. And I, you know, I was thinking about this, and I know a lot of people in our audience are like, well, my partner, I try to make these requests and they just don't, they turn me down, they reject me, they say, don't bother me, or whatever it happens to be. There's resistance. And we talked, you know, a little bit about this with, you know, creating some common goals is one way to reduce some of this resistance. But I do think it's a very good suggestion just to say, be curious about the resistance. I don't know, Heather, what you've seen, but I noticed that a lot of times when we are feeling rejected and we're experiencing this resistance from our spouse, it sucks. Yeah. And I know I've even been guilty of this myself. I'm like, fine, Jen isn't going to listen to me. Who cares? I'm not going to deal with this. And I get angry myself when it, and later on when I've calmed down, I'm like, oh, why was Jen turning down my bids for attention or my bids to have discussion here? Why? And as soon as I start asking that question, Jen and I have sat down and we have some really great understanding, and we usually get to where we need to go. But it all kind of comes down to this idea here of being a bit more curious about this resistance. And I want to get your thoughts on this, Heather. Why would this be important? Why would it be important to be curious rather than reactive to some of these feelings? What does that do?
I like that word, curiosity. It's shifted a lot of things for me. Mm-hmm. So I've been in the same situation, right? Where Ben, I felt like I put myself out there. I made a bid for affection or being valued, and it was rejected, or at least it seemed to be, and that sucks and that hurts. And so then I go into feeling rejected and putting forth resistance, and that then creates the intimacy loop going the opposite direction of what we want. I'm less willing to be close and connected with him, and then when he makes a bid for closeness and connection or intimacy, then I don't feel heard or appreciated, so I reject him, then he feels rejected, and back and forth we go until we pull further and further and further apart. So what I've learned to do is to, exactly this idea. Instead of getting defensive and feeling more resistance and feeling myself like close off, I get curious. First, I get curious about, why am I even feeling this? What's going on inside of myself that's causing this to come up? And it usually comes that there's some kind of thing in myself that I'm insecure about. There's something in me that I'm actually not feeling so good about myself. And then I look at that and I say, okay, what part's Ben's and what part is mine here? Actually, usually a large chunk of that is actually my responsibility. It's my creation. It's what's going on inside my head. It's my own insecurity that Ben just happened to do something that kind of triggered that insecurity to come up, right? And then I look at, like, well, where is he really coming from? You know, that curiosity about what could be going on inside of Ben's head, inside of Ben's life that I may not be aware of, which goes right into P, perspective of our path method. So when I approach it that way, I realize, A, a lot of this is actually my own thing. I'm being a little hypersensitive because I'm insecure here. So what do I need to do to fill that in myself so that I'm not expecting Ben to fix everything for me? If we're going to our partner expecting them to be our sole source of feeling valued, feeling good enough, feeling worthy, feeling beautiful or attractive, or just feeling good enough, right? They will fall short, because no human being can provide all of that for another human being. It's too much. There's just no possible way that they can. So we need to look at ourselves and realize where the gaps are in our own lives, in our own hearts, in our own selves, right? Those areas that we're really insecure about, and work to become a whole and to fill those needs so that then we aren't desperately needing our spouse to do all of that for us, right? And then when we feel more secure, more confident in ourselves, we feel more whole, more complete as we are, then we can come to a space of like, I'm curious what's going on for you. Where are you really coming from? And that puts down those defense mechanisms. It steps us out of that drama triangle that we really like to talk about here too, right? So that then we can actually connect and actually address what issues may be there. And we can come to our spouse with empathy for what they're going through. So that's it in a nutshell. But curiosity is a beautiful word.
Yes.
To have when we're feeling the ache in our heart, or we're feeling that defensiveness, we're feeling that resistance. What's really going on here? We put down our swords, we realize that we actually have a lot more in common than we do otherwise.
Absolutely. Well, Heather, are we wanting to move on to our Marriage Myth Buster for the week? Is that yes, where we're at right now?
All right. So this one, I don't even know where this came from, but apparently it's something that some people out there are feeling, because we got this from people in our group. So our MythBuster this week is, men are not biologically built for marriage. I've also heard this said, men are not biologically built for monogamy, being with one partner. So let's talk about where that's coming from, Mark.
So first off, I want to just say, I think like you and I are on the same page here. We don't like to make broad sweeping statements about any group, such as like all men, all women, men and women, gender in general. Is just, they're such huge groups that it's kind of ridiculous to presume any sort of commonality that links every person of a specific gender, that it just, it becomes a bit ridiculous. But like you're mentioning some things, like, where does this idea come from? Like the idea that men are built for monogamy or marriage. I suspect the idea comes from, you know, like if I had to make some guesses, and I've seen some arguments about this, the idea is coming simply how we procreate. Like the idea goes that of necessity, women need to lock down a marriage partner in order to create a safe environment while they bear their child and take care of them. Whereas men, there's no real instinctual incentive to stay in that relationship. I mean, you could even argue, I think, further, biologically speaking, that there are specific hormones that bond mother to child at the time of pregnancy. And, you know, just factually speaking, that isn't really the case with men. So I can see where this argument might come. What were you saying?
Oxytocin, yeah, right? Is that specific exactly. hormone that's the love mm-hmm. hormone that bonds mother to child. And yeah. it just isn't as present in men biologically.
Sure. Yeah. And so I might see, if you take some of those facts, and you might make this argument. It would suggest maybe that men are not built for marriage, as there's not a specific biological process that links them to their spouse or their children beyond getting someone pregnant. But my counter argument to that is like, okay, well, what does it mean to actually be biologically built for marriage or monogamy? We could discuss so many ways to measure it. And so certainly hormones would be one. We could also, we could discuss hormones around the birthing process, but we could also discuss, say, neurotransmitters involved in bonding with a partner. We could talk about like that whole brain process of like what actually happens when you are emotionally close, emotionally safe with someone else. We could discuss the feelings that you get when you feel totally understood and accepted by that one person, which you might say, oh, that's feelings. If you know enough about like neurobiology, like there's a biological process that goes on there. You could actually read, you know, scan the brain, and you could see what's going on. We could discuss all the physical and emotional support that can be received by a solid family situation, which I would say, you know, there's a good biological reason to be in a supportive family environment, certainly. I'm gonna say it feels really great biologically perhaps when I'm done with work and there's dinner ready. That's, I mean, like, my point here, I'm not going to argue that my wife making me dinner at the end of a day is like a biological reason. But I'm also going to say that the argument, like, it's not, there's not really a strong basis for this. And we have to be careful when we're making discussions like this. It sounds really poppy. It sounds really interesting to say, okay, here's this broad statement about men. And that really describes why my husband left me. Great. But you kind of really have to kind of think about, what are you actually measuring here? What are you saying here? And what about all the counterexamples? So are we saying that men that stay within the marriage, they're working against their biology? It doesn't feel like that to me.
No. Doesn't feel like that to me either.
Yeah. I would say that there's a lot of other things going on here. I would argue that there are many reasons why a man might leave his marriage or family. It's a complex discussion as to why they might be leaving. And to reduce this to something as simple as gender is a garbage argument. I don't know of a better way to describe it. It's just, if we wanted to talk about this scientifically, like if I'm talking about solid, measurement systems, solid scientific process, you could not really build a solid scientific argument on this, even though it sounds scientific, because you're talking about biology. I don't know. I think if I had presented this sort of idea to maybe some of my professors while I was in school, they would have laughed at me and said, go find a different thing to argue here.
Yeah. I think the underlying thing here, Mark, is that we're maybe trying to look for an excuse, did something, because maybe it removes some of that pain of like, I was rejected because of who I am. And so it wasn't me, it was my husband's biology that made him do it. And so it's kind of shifting responsibility a little bit off of ourselves and kind of creating this story or this excuse that maybe makes it feel a little better, so we don't have to take responsibility for our part, because that hurts. And we often see there's a lot of different, you know, this is one of those arguments, but there's a lot of other, you know, things that are narcissism and this and this and this and these words that we just kind of throw around without actually really knowing what they mean, because it removes us from some level of accountability or responsibility in the situation. So it kind of lessens the pain of it, instead of actually looking at like, what happened here? Why did it happen? What can I learn from it? How can I grow? How can I become better?
Or perhaps, why does it keep happening to me? I can easily see someone saying, oh, I've had 2, 3, 4 partners leave me, cheat on me. It must be because they're men. Is really somewhat not looking at the right sort of problem, in my opinion. I would argue that there is probably, like you said, something internal that needs to be looked at. Like, why do you keep attracting these partners that are not perhaps high in commitment?
Yes, I've heard women say that. So it is out there. So we need to be careful about what we're saying and why we're saying it, and go a little deeper. All right. So my friends, we shared a lot together today. We talked about what feeling valued really means to you. We identified that it's often one of those 5 love languages. And sometimes we're giving love to our partner in the way that we want to receive it, and our partner may be giving it to us in the way that they want to receive it. And so the basic idea here is, let's find what's really wanted, what is important to you, what is important to them. Let's really understand our situation and if it's appropriate to ask for bids of affection and significance and value right now, or is that going to backfire? How we can create some common goals that are going to actually help draw us closer together, no matter where we're at in our relationship right now, and how to make requests really clear so that we all get our needs met. And when we experience resistance, explore it with curiosity. So I hope that this has been of value to you. I'd love to know in the comments what stood out to you the most. What aha moment did you have? And go ahead and try some of these in your marriage now and let us know how it goes. We read every single comment that we get. And if you want us to coach you on how to connect with your partner, even if they're pulling away, how to identify maybe what common goals you guys can work on right now, how to have appropriate levels of, you know, this level of connection and intimacy and value right now? Or is there something that you need to work on first so that then we can get you there? Because that's what we do. So if you want that, go ahead and book a call with us, a marriage analysis session at highthrivecoaching.com/apply. And we will help you understand what's really going on there and give you clarity on how to move forward. If you like this video, give us a thumbs up, leave us a comment, subscribe if you want more videos just like this. And of course, join our Facebook group if you want to be an incredible community of people who are going and experiencing the same things as you are. And you can see how many wins are coming in from those that are applying our method. So thank you guys so much for joining us today. Next week, we're going to share with you when to tell if your marriage is over or not. That's going to be really exciting. Help you guys get some clarity. Thank you, Mark. And we will talk to you guys all very soon. Have a thriving marriage.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.